Hey everyone, as always, thanks for listening. I just want to thank you for your loyalty, if you're still tuning in some fashion here. I apologize for the strange and irregular intermittencies between shows. It's just a matter of personal and professional zeitgeist at the moment. Hopefully I'll get back up to cruising altitude sometime soon. Today, I'm just going to talk very, very briefly about the professional and I guess we could say egotistical acumen of one Michelangelo through the lens of Mark Twain. Here we go. So it stands to reason that the avatar for artistic excellence is still held up in at least a philosophical sense by the person of Michelangelo. And indeed, if you were to go to Vatican City and look inside the Sistine Chapel and stand there, which I've never done, but if you look straight up, you will see an absolute atrociously complex, not a mosaic, but I can describe it as a mosaic of miniature masterpieces with overlapping meaning. It is interesting to me that Michelangelo's name carries so much weight today, along with, of course, the rest of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles who managed to assume their names. I think it was Raphael and I forgot what the other one is. You can slap me later for not being able to... Leonardo, I think it was. But if you go to Rome, you would see what I consider to be my favorite piece of art, if you will. When I was studying the art of Western civilization, I came across and I was looking through the art of various people, and Michelangelo's Pieta really stood out to me. It is essentially something that is a depiction of a moment of Golgotha where the body of the crucified Christ is laid across the lap of his mother, Mary. And the interesting thing about it to me was how, if you'll excuse the term, lifelike it appeared to be. Not so much Mary, but the way Christ's Adam's apple and his head jutted back, and just the way it really actually looked like a recently deceased and at rest in repose human body resting comfortably across the lap of another human. And I was kind of stunned that Michelangelo was able to pull that kind of subtlety out of a piece of marble. Now, a lot of people are aware of this alleged statement, and it's probably true. I don't have my references here today, that Michelangelo did not look at his carvings as something that was created, that was sort of actively and concavely created out of nothing, but he referred to them more as objects and things that were already within the marble, and he simply released them by taking the peripheral bits of marble away, which is an interesting outlook and actually made him somewhat of a philosopher that way. The other thing that I love about the Pieta is a couple of backstories. More recently, in 1972, I don't love this part, but a guy named Laszlo Toth managed to get in there with a hammer and bash off Mary's arm after like 8 hammer strikes on Pentecost Sunday of 1972. But prior to that, a bit of pseudo-vandalism took place, but not by an external source or somebody with an axe to grind, but it was Michelangelo himself. If you ever see the Pieta and you look very closely on Mary, there is a sash that is running diagonally down her body from the shoulder, and you will see written in sort of Roman script, but I believe written in Italian, something that translates to Michelangelo made this. It is amazing that someone with his skill and his acumen and his ability and his reputation had an ego that was so fragile as an artist, not an uncommon thing, by the way, that apparently somebody's overt and audible speculation that another artist may have been the one that created this caused Michelangelo to, I guess by the light of the moon, break in the middle of the night and take his tools and sign his name across the art. And as far as I know, it was the only piece of art that he ever placed his name on. And it is also stated that this capricious fit of ego was a regret that he carried the rest of his life, because for all points and purposes, the Pieta was somewhat marred by the fact that it looked like the equivalent of Renaissance-era spray paint and vandalism created by the own artist, which is a very interesting point. His reputation was something that blew up long past his death. And this is why I mentioned Mark Twain, who I'm going to mention a lot. I am going to be doing a series of little modules from one of my two favorite books by him. My two favorite books by him are Roughing It, and the other is The Innocents Abroad. The Innocents Abroad is something that he referred to jokingly as the New Pilgrim's Progress. Details a trip that he took by ship predominantly in 1867 through Europe and ultimately the Holy Land. The original base motivation for doing this was that he sat in Sunday school in his life, and he had been told that Jerusalem was this glorious, green, lush place. At least that's how it had been painted in his mind, and yet he had heard rumors that it was far more barren at the time, and desolate, and arid, and without lots of water, and without lots of notable architecture other than the high points. And he wanted to go see what the reality was. And when he got there, he was, of course, somewhat astounded that it did not meet the catalog level descriptions that he had heard throughout his childhood. But he didn't just go to Jerusalem. He went to Rome. He went to Gibraltar. He went to a number of places, and I am going to cover all of those. But there is an interesting place where he's in Rome, and everywhere he goes, he is being treated by guides. They are paying good money to people to carry them around and talk to the locals and deal in the local languages and currency and exchange rates and everything like that. But the other thing he was also noticing very heavily was that the guides were absolutely and profusely proud of Michelangelo, so much so that they began to attribute everything within reach to being the work of Michelangelo in order to keep up interest. And possibly it had monetary motivations under it, that if they were guides that provided the most mystery and austere moments of history and recollection, that it would translate into tips, I guess. So Mark Twain in 1869 publishes his book The Innocents Abroad, which was one of the first worldwide read travel books of all time. Now, mind you, his initial notes were small articles that he had written and sent back home, and that is contained in a book called Traveling with the Innocents Abroad. A publisher then asked him to convert this into a book where he had to sort of expand and extrapolate on certain things he was talking about, and he did. And of course, his observations of different cultures and different people and different physical characteristics were at times kind of harsh. If you read the original one, it was his wife, Libby, that, saved his literary career by editing things down and softening some of the sharp edges of his observational skills. But she also had the wisdom to leave some of his incisive comments and definitely his sarcasm there. And this book is loaded with sarcasm, and it is loaded with wit, and it is located with observational skills that are absolutely amazing. But I do have to admit, I really, really do love this passage. And it's after he is overwhelmed with all the discussions of Michelangelo. He goes down this road. Quote, "In this connection, I wish to say one word about Michelangelo Buonarroti. I used to worship the mighty genius of Michelangelo, that man who was great in poetry, painting, sculpture, architecture, great in everything he undertook. But I do not want Michelangelo for breakfast, for luncheon, for dinner, for tea, for supper, and between meals. I like a change occasionally. In Genoa, he designed everything. In Milan, he or his pupils designed everything. He designed the Lake of Como. In Padua, Verona, Venice, Bologna, who did we ever hear from of guides but of Michelangelo? In Florence, he painted everything, designed everything. Nearly in what he did not design, he used to sit on a favorite stone and look at, and they showed us the stone. In Pisa, he designed everything but the old shot tower, and they would have attributed that to him if it had not been so awfully out of the perpendicular. He designed the piers of Leghorn and the custom house regulations of the Civita Vecchia. But here it is frightful. He designed St. Peter's. He designed the Pope. He designed the Pantheon, the uniform of the Pope's soldiers, the Tiber, the Vatican, the Colosseum, the Capitol, the Tarpeian Rock, the Barbieri Palace, St. John Lateran, the Chapanga, the Appian Way, the Seven Hills, the Baths of Caracalla, and the Claudian Aqueduct, the Cloacta Maxima, the eternal boar designed to the eternal city, and unless all men in books do lie, he painted everything in it. Dan, and the other day to the guide, said, enough, enough, enough. Say no more. Lump the whole thing. Say that the creator made Italy from designs by Michelangelo. I never felt so fervently thankful, so soothed, so tranquil, so filled with a blessed peace as I did yesterday when I learned that Michelangelo was dead. And this is box number 7.